Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Hello, I'm Hannes, and I'm here in London today, and I'm talking to Flavia about setting up support structures in their organization. But I'm first going to let Flavia introduce herself to you.
Hi, I'm Flavia. I've been a software engineer for 5 years. I've been working at FundUp since then, since I graduated. And I've initially came from Romania all the way here and had a very nice welcome. And I'm very excited to be here.
Maybe let's do first things first. You said you work for an organization called FundApps.
Yep.
Can you maybe tell me what FundApps is and what kind of products they build?
Yeah, of course. FundApps has been a software company in the regulatory compliance industry for about 14 years. So we have been working on solutions that are basically helping investment managers and financial institutions actually monitor their investments and helping them report their holdings to regulatory entities. That means basically that if they need to disclose anything to particular jurisdictions, we are there to help them manage that and say exactly what needs to be included.
Right.
Yeah.
This is a type of disclosures with antitrust litigation where you have a too big stake in a certain company. Is it that kind of thing?
Yes. There are different types of stakes. You have sometimes also voting power over those shares. You can make certain decisions over those shares. But more importantly, it helps you understand where you sit in the market. But also it helps the regulations and the regulators understand where you sit. This is to help, especially with a problem that happened a while ago, about 2008, where the financial crisis happened. A big contributing factor was the lack of transparency in the market. So we're hoping that our solutions could help mitigate that faster and hopefully avoid having our clients actually get fines for not sending those disclosures in.
So your clients are mostly investment companies that need to get a little bit of a view on their portfolio and to figure out where they need to take action.
Yes, that's basically right. We have a few other products, but our main product is called Shareholding Disclosure. And that particular service is helping us process particular positions of our clients, particularly investment managers that work within financial institutions like hedge funds, pension funds, and they basically use our system to navigate especially their positions and assess whether they have to take some sort of action. So the results that they're getting could be as a simple solution as just reviewing those results or actually generating a disclosure, reporting it to the regulations and see what they say.
Right. Mm. So you have a software solution that helps your customers with that. You're there in the team that is between the customer support and the team that is actually developing the solution, right?
Well, I've been part of the team that's building the solution for the past 4 years or so. I've then switched to a leading position where I'm helping the engineering team within support to help fix particular issues that are happening in the organization. The structure or the process of support that is in FundApps is in general, the clients would raise some requests and our client success team is receiving those tickets and triaging whether they need technical supervision or not. But obviously some of these tickets creep in into our territory and that's when we assess, should we actually take action? Is there something that misbehaving in the service or do Do we need to have a conversation perhaps with our product team to assess whether they need to take some sort of action, whether they need to create a pitch for a new feature improvement or just creating some educational content?
Right. So it's a lot of different responsibilities.
Yeah.
That's the situation you ended in right now.
Hmm.
But you've also been part of the journey towards the current situation, if I'm correct, right?
Yes, the support structure has developed quite a bit ever since I joined. So I was about six months in when we started considering a lot more how our support structure would look like.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, we were between 10 to 20 engineers. We grew about 50% in only 1 year. And our structure back then was every single engineer that felt that they had confidence in triaging, in debugging, they would be part of the traditional support rotation, which meant that you'd be on support for about once a quarter at the time. So you got a bit of exposure to the product, which felt nice, but you also got a lot of opportunities to see how you can grow the product in different ways, in different shapes. That changed over the course of multiple years where we got more successful in selling our main product, but we also got appetite for more risk, appetite for building new features, more services that may not be completely related to the main product. So it felt a bit unfair that everyone should be still on support for the main product.
Is that the prime reason why you started putting in place a dedicated team to do this support engineering?
It was one of the reasons, but it felt as we were growing bigger and bigger as a team, the context switch was far, far more detrimental to the overall flow and productivity of these teams. Since we were in a position where we were having micro teams trying a few experiments with ShapeUp, it felt appropriate to also see how we can change the model of support. So for example, when we were doing ShapeUp and we would work in 6-week streams, we thought that our support team could also be in a 6-week iteration.
Right.
And that was when initially we thought that we could potentially have a team around it. But since it's only 6 weeks, they won't feel the dreading feeling that they will be there forever and they can move on to building more fun stuff. But it didn't really quite work. I think at that point in time, we were not super ready to have such small iterations of people being in the support team because there was a lot in the backlog and there were still a lot of practices that weren't quite in place to really sustain that amount of work. So
that was a rotation of product engineers then being on the support team for 16 weeks and then rotating.
That's right.
Basically replicating the model of having a support rotation, but then for a little bit longer period.
Yes.
And with a little bit bigger group of people that rotate around.
That's right.
What were the things that were good about that and what was bad about that? Why did you move on from this?
A few benefits were very clear from the beginning. It felt right because it matched the model of all of the other teams that we had currently going on. So it felt like we were in sync with everyone else. Also, it gave some people the opportunity to become experts in particular parts of our main service. But over time, we felt clear that some things were missing, some non-functional things. We didn't have the right monitoring in place. We didn't have the right processes in place to continue this cycle on and on. And in general, our engineers that were on support during those iterations felt a bit burned out. It could have been because we weren't necessarily looking into support goals at the time. So the premise was you get a ticket, you react to it, you triage it, and you go on. And you do that forever until you're done. And it's not a necessarily nice place to be. But we fixed that, I think, in the last year or so, which I can go into now.
Yeah, how did you fix that?
So we had decided to put an entire team on support for indefinite amount of time, which meant no one is changing its positions for at least a few good 6 months. And the structure was slightly different, which meant that we are about 4 people in the team right now. And one person will stay on the front line. We call it the front desk, where you can respond to every query as it comes, try to reduce the response time, triage a little bit the requests that are coming in. There will be a person on second desk where they have the space to analyze tickets that are more tricky, that may have carried over from previous weeks. Then there's the third desk where you can have 1 or 2 people. And that's where the magic happens, I would like to say. Then because you had the time in that time frame to improve the support burden in some way. You had the time to work on your monitoring, on your observability, so see what exactly is not working in your support workflow at the moment. Mm-hmm. So instead of using that space to create new features or just accept small feature requests that are coming your way, you are mostly using that time to fill in the gaps into your monitoring and into your observability, into your processes. And that really paid off over time.
So it's basically a fixed position that you freed up.
Yeah.
To patch any holes in how you operate your own product.
Definitely. And I think the fact that we're still rotating in those positions within the team really helps freshen up the minds of everyone around. And I think that's what really keeps everyone going. They don't feel burnout. They feel like they contribute in some way.
What sort of things have come out of that, like having that role in place? Can you have some very specific examples of things that were implemented by people that were working that role?
Certainly. We are talking in the context of our main product here, and there are a lot of microservices at play that are integrated with the main product. So by extension, we were also responsible for them. And what it became clear is that we didn't have any sort of visibility over the health of the deployments in those areas. Whenever a change would happen, they could have gotten stuck multiple versions behind. And it became clear once people started complaining about it and actually making some fixes around those areas that we can put more monitoring in place. A different problem that we are currently fixing right now is the creation of our tenants, the creation of our environments for our clients. It's still, as much as we automated a few elements of that particular category of work, there's still a lot of automation that can be put in place. And there's been a lot of delays because people are modernizing our deployment pipelines, our architecture, and it felt more appropriate to start with a fresh set of tech stack. So we're now working on towards actually building those automations, and I'm very excited about that because it could save us tens of hours every month.
Right. Are the people in the team at the moment still people who rotate in and out of the dev team, or do you just rotate inside the support engineering team?
We rotate mostly inside the support engineering team.
Okay.
But since we are in a better position than we were last year, we feel far more confident in just welcoming anyone into the team that wants to try our processes. It's also a very nice place to onboard new people that are coming into the company because you get exposed to problems.
Not only problems, but many different parts of the product also, I imagine.
Certainly, yes. Yeah.
How close is the collaboration between that team and the development team? Because I imagine that you're developing parts that improve the operations. Mm. I guess those get contributed back to the code base as well.
Yeah.
They push new versions your way, which you're then supporting. I've seen in my days a fair few situations where that causes friction. Like how do you deal with that inside your organization?
Yes, in our case, we collaborate daily with our dev team. Especially, we have regular checkups with all the teams that are sharing the same code base as us. I think that's kind of how we navigated the fact that we do share our code base, that we are aware of everything that's happening most of the times. There is also an aspect of the engineering culture that we have. We are very vocal about significant changes that are happening across. And we had our share of painful events where we had to understand how we can avoid incompatibilities between versions and actually understanding if we need to rebase and a lot of aspects that could block us from each other. Mm-hmm. The thing that really helped us was over-communicating a lot, lots of the time, over-collaborating. In particular, as we are in a position where I usually like to call ourselves the tenor of the orchestra or the conductor of the orchestra, in a sense, supervising a lot of the underlying processes and projects that are happening. I like to be in regular contact with some of the team leads to understand what's the current process and what we should be expecting to happen next.
If I want to summarize this, in your team, in your role, there's a whole bunch of different things passing through it. Mm. You have customers that have contacted you with issues. Those tickets make it to your team. But also things like feature requests pass through your team. Sometimes you identify like, hey, this is a misunderstanding, and you communicate it to the team that is making the training content for your customers and whatever. Mm. You're a little bit the spider in the web pulling all the string, right?
Yeah, I do like to think of it that way.
So, but that also makes it really interesting because it means that you also have the possibility to impact a lot of the parts of the business, not just the dev team, but like how have some of those things played out and how have you changed the processes when you're working, for instance, with the team that makes the training content?
Certainly. One example comes into mind when you are asking me this, which is precisely a part of the product that was a part of a functionality of the product that was used quite differently to what you would expect by the clients. Mm-hmm. So there was a particular page on our platform that was aggregating all the potential data that the client has put into our system. And our client thought this is the best place to take all that data back and aggregate it and use it in my company because there are different aggregations within my company. Mm-hmm. So I can have an eagle eye view. And it was particularly a very low performance endpoint on our side since we were not expecting that page to be used that way. And initially we thought, oh, we're gonna use paginations, we're gonna cache it, we're gonna find different ways of fixing this. But after several conversations with our product team, we actually realized that it's far better to communicate with our clients and understand what do they really need from that page, because that page was not meant to be used that way.
Yeah.
And it was a very lovely moment when we understood that we actually don't need to fix everything that our clients are saying, but actually have a conversation with our product team.
Yeah.
And in that moment, we realized that we have far more impact than just fixing things that are coming our way. Another aspect of this job that I really liked, and it's related to the documentation piece that you are alluding to, we realized that a part of the job is not just helping our clients implement our solutions, but understanding how our client services understand our documentation and how easy it is for them to do their job, to do our job by themselves. Mm-hmm. Because we currently have a lot of documentation in place, but some of it may not be as clear as one would think. And if we were just adding a few bits and pieces and spending a bit more time creating workshops that could help them understand how they can implement with a particular client, it could help us also reduce the support burden that we have. We would have far less support requests coming our way of that sort.
Right. You went from not having a dedicated support engineering department, like everybody picking up the role for a week or a few weeks and then rotating through the team until you got back at the start again, to now having a dedicated team that is the spider in the web and trying to connect basically the customer-facing part of the business. Am I putting that correctly?
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
So you've gone from zero to hero over quite a bit of time. What are the hurdles that you really had to get over? Like, was there a moment where you thought, like, this isn't working, we're doing it all wrong, we have to do things differently? I'm looking to see, like, what I can learn from your journey in that regard.
Yeah, there were definitely a few bumps in the road. I would say initially in the beginning of our journey, it was particularly difficult to understand what does the business need from such a team, because we felt the need to be far more autonomous than we initially expected. When you don't have a support team, when you never had the concept of an internal team that's facilitating this, I guess, pulling strings around, it's quite difficult for the seniorship to actually understand what is our purpose. So it was very easy for them to interpret us as a team that could just build other things. So they would throw a lot of feature requests at us, expecting us to do all of the things that the product managers didn't have time to put on their roadmap.
Another dev team. How did you push back against that?
It was a lot of conversations that had to happen to understand that, to make clear what are the current burdens. The problems weren't that we didn't have enough people to build new features. The problem it was that there wasn't anyone to maintain the old features in a mature way with the right standards in place. So we had to assess exactly where we stand with our current services. There wasn't a lot of information about how do we track past support tickets. What exactly were the, we didn't even know what were the pain points. We just knew that our issues are piling on and on. And that felt enough to get a bit more freedom into what we decide to do.
I heard you mention two things that seemingly contradict each other. On the one side, you just mentioned more freedom for the team. On the other hand, you mentioned that you were evaluating what the values of the company were to align with that, which basically suggests less freedom because we're going to align ourselves in the directionals. Is that something that has been a struggle, or that did that magically just line up, or how did that work?
I think I don't necessarily see values of a company going in contradiction with freedom. It's more about aligning the team's expectations of what they should be looking for, what they should build towards. Because there are many different ways in which you can get to translate, you can get to, transpose, is that a word? Transcend basically initiatives into actual business objectives. Back when we started, a few of our goals were getting into a profitable state. So understanding how we are consuming our resources, how we can reduce that amount of time, how we can basically see ways of improving our performance and becoming more efficient. But on the other side, our main objective was keeping the lights bright for our customers, making sure that the response time is nice and low, having a great relationship with our customers and understanding that they are listened to and that the pulse is there constantly. And that helped enough because it felt like the value is at a high level enough that a lot of elements could be put into place to build towards gaining that goal for the company.
Right. So keeping your customer in mind in that whole process is super important as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any metrics that you, because ideally, like as a customer, what I would want if I call any type of tech support, doesn't matter if it's FundApps or anyone else, I will want somebody to quickly pick up my case. Somebody who knows what they're doing, knows what they're talking about, and that basically own the process from there on. Like they'll take care of it, that either I get an answer or my problem gets solved. Right? That's the ideal world.
Yeah.
That would require infinite resources. So probably there's going to be a trade-off here or there. What are the values that you measure against when you decide, like, we're going to put more resources into this process, we're going to now prioritize this ticket? Like, how do you deal with all of that?
We had a few metrics in place, as you were saying. Most of them were around our response time. A lot of satisfaction was being brought just by the fact that the client is being, we have responded to the client's requests. But the way that we would prioritize certain tickets over the others is essentially what is the impact, the current impact of the problem. Is something that only this client in particular is facing, or is actually a problem that nobody else has raised, but it's happening across all of our environments. And in general, if there is an opportunity for growth, we would sense whether it is the right time to go for it or not. For those tickets that we are not quite sure exactly where they sit, we have a lot of tagging in place to have particular categories that we can supervise over time and see how are they growing across the months.
Right.
And that's our general instinct on how we can pick up patterns. So patterns of issues that are coming our way, that would be one way that we certainly prioritize. But sometimes you have to pick the ones that are for the clients that are shouting the most, unfortunately.
The louder client gets the solution.
Yeah.
Something interesting to me, like as a developer and a technical person, I heard you mention bootstrapping your clients' environments, or you just mentioned whether it's a problem that occurs in all the environments. That leads me to assume that every customer has their own deployment of your product. Is that correct?
That's right. Yes.
That's correct. Does it get deployed in their cloud tenants, but it's managed by you? Is it that type of situation?
Yes, every single client has their own account, and that's where we deploy our infrastructure. They get their own versions of our tenanted applications, but we also have a lot of non-tenanted services that are communicating with us.
The tricky part with that is, I'm assuming, because this is both very important and mission-critical data to your customers, so it's very confidential. It's also running into a whole bunch of different cloud accounts, and sometimes you get problems that are probably hard to reproduce. How do you deal with that?
It's still quite a tricky problem to fix, and we're looking even this year into see how we can replicate particular environments without accessing sensitive data. Security is a very, very big part of FundApps, so we are treating that with utmost respect. We are currently trying a phase where we are asking our client success team to replicate to the best of their knowledge how the system works for the client. So they have access to the client data. Obviously, they cannot disclose it, but there are particular setups that they can replicate knowing the particular skeleton of their files.
Right.
So we're doing a bit of trialing with restricted environments where our client services can use that kind of skeleton and see how it behaves in those environments and see whether they can replicate the problem or not. Yes, but we're not quite there yet. There are still a few elements that cannot be truly, truly referenced correctly. But in general, we are trying our best to encourage our client services team, try to replicate the issue first, because you are the most likely to get it to that point rather than us. You have far more access to that data than us. There are certain elements where we still feel like we can access the client environment for the people who have privileged access, who have been background checked. And that's where we can do one-off fixes. But we're trying to reduce them as much as possible.
I can imagine. There's nothing more annoying than having different branches that you deploy to different clients and then trying to manage all of that in the long run. If you could look ahead, like from the situation where you're in right now, what would be one of the things that you would like to work on to improve the processes that you currently have?
There are a few elements. One we just touched on, the aspect of our replication. Mm-hmm. It can be far better. I would like to get into a place where we can use our support team as a tool for educating all our joiners to understand how our system works. And I would like...
Joiners in this case being
new developers.
New employees for FunLab.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Because it can be a very trial by fire type of
Nobody
project.
Promised it was going to be easy.
Yeah. And it should be somewhat challenging, but it should feel satisfactory.
They also shouldn't be drowning.
Yes, exactly. They shouldn't feel burned out or overwhelmed at this point. So I would like us to get into that stage. When it comes to other aspects of our engineering practices, I would like to get in a position where our developer experience is in a better place. We are still experiencing a bit of toil here and there with our local setups, and our deployments could be a bit even more observable than they are right now. But I would say I'm still quite happy with how far we've become in only 1 year. And the intention at a particular stage, whether that is in a year from now or 3 years from now, is to get into a place where we don't need a support team again.
Yeah.
So having the opportunity to just be on support for a week or two and then try again a new project, that's where we want to get back into.
Oh, really? So basically you're aiming at going back to the situation that you were in before, but basically by making your own job obsolete.
Yes.
And I'm guessing, like, in that whole process, that role of implementing improvements to the operations, whether it's the deployments or the observability or whatever, that's going to be key in making that happen, if it's even possible at all to get there.
Yes, it's a moonshot kind of goal, and we'll see if we can get there. It might be a cyclical project where we get into a place where we can no longer have a team, then decide actually where there are a few things that still need to be looked into. But we are currently in a process where we are trying to ingest more and more features in under the support umbrella that we have. That's the interesting current, very interesting part of this work, because we are in a position where we can set the standards of a great supportability for a service that we never touched. Because it's very hard for us as people who have a lot of domain knowledge to suddenly ingest a lot more domain knowledge to understand how to support particular features. So we need to figure out how we can set the standards of great documentation, of great monitoring already, great SLOs in place, so that we don't need to do most of the work. We just can use whatever it's been handed over.
What kind of tips would you have for people who are going to embark on a similar journey to yours? Like, they're struggling dealing with customer requests. Like, what are the tips that you can give them that they can learn from what you have done?
I would say be patient. Initially, there will be a lot of confusion of what you should be looking into first. You should assess as far as possible what type of requests are coming your way and what are the elements that you need to improve first. The tools or like the guide that particularly helped us is setting up our own team goals, understanding what exactly needs to be, what exactly we need to reach by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. For us, it was quite simple, reduce the response time necessary, having our clients happy and feeling a sense of happiness within the team that we're heading into the right direction. That for us felt like it was enough. As far as anything else goes, you have to be in constant contact with the teams that are building your code base to ensure that nothing creeps out of your horizon. Yeah.
Who would have thought communication was such a key skill?
Right? I know. Yes. We are very grateful at FoundHubs that we have a lot of people that can communicate very clearly. Yeah. And we have all sorts of communication, but you can never have enough. There are all types of communications that are happening that you don't even consider sometimes as just, it's not only the verbal regular catch-ups, it's the documentation that you leave in place, it's the findings that you have, is the fact that you fixed the problem that actually everyone else was struggling with and you make it very clear. Mm. And you show how you can fix it. Yeah, I'm very, very proud that we have this kind of culture.
I'm happy to hear somebody talk about a support team in a very warm way and to hear about a company where this is, instead of being a point of friction between development and the people who pick up the phone, you're actually trying to pull everybody closer together and basically improve the whole company from that point of view. And I think for me personally, if I were to embark on the journey and take something away from what you just told me, it's do that. Like be talking to all the other parties involved, whether they be your customers, but also your customer success managers and the support team and the dev team and whatever. And if you can align all of those, then good things can happen. And then the friction that is usually there, because I've been in plenty of environments where there is friction between the help desk and dev team because, well, we never get reproducible tickets or we can never figure out what's going on. Like, it seems like you, by putting that team in the middle, you've solved some of that. And that sounds pretty great.
Yeah, certainly. It's been a very fun project for us and to see how we can make support a place where everyone feels heard and everyone feels like they contribute to the company, not just react to some tickets that are coming our way. And it's been a very pleasant journey to see how we are also heard back. Mm. A lot of the impact that we have made across the year has been our main reason for that, keep us going, that makes us feel like we're making a difference.
It's so good to hear. And I wish you all the luck in the world making your own job obsolete again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining me today. And thank you for watching.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.